It is fun to pretend. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campbell, California. Thought for today. It's fun to pretend. I thoroughly enjoy Hogan's Heroes as a beautiful series of comedies. It's stories about what happened in the prison camp during the Second World War, and perhaps these things actually did happen. They seem unbelievable, but they probably did. Now, on the show itself, the characters who are playing the various roles are playing various roles. Well, they have to slip out of camp, which is something that they don't have a pass for and permission to do, and if they get caught, they'll get shot and stuff like that, but they go out of camp, and sometimes they go out of camp just for an evening, just because they want to have a beer. And, you know, really important stuff, yeah. So they go out of camp, and they sometimes dress as different beings. Like one fellow, he loved to be an old lady, or at least he played the role very well. And he put on an old lady's wig and hat and a shawl over his shoulders and walked like an old lady. And I don't know that old ladies walk like that anymore, but that's the way he walked. And of course, everyone accepted him as an old lady, and no one confronted him because that was his opinion. I am an old lady. Please respond to me as an old lady. And so everyone responded to him as an old lady. And he did silly things that if they had known who he was, they would have taken him down a peg or two. But they responded to him as an old lady. Well, at one scene, Colonel Klink was going for a physical examination. And so these prisoners formed as a body of trainers to train Klink and get his muscles in shape. And when you looked at the little old lady person who played that part occasionally, he was so agile. He jumped over this and he swung over that, and he was just really in good shape and really fantastic. And the various other people that you wouldn't expect to do these things, here they were hanging on by their knees and back bending and pulling up and just really being rather fantastic. Now, what brought this all about was this morning, we were having our breakfast, and I always enjoy two eggs for breakfast, and maybe a piece of bacon, but at least two eggs, and a nice piece of toast. Well, Sylvia made the eggs and the toast just perfect. It was one of her most ideal eggs that she had ever made. She'd always been seeking to make eggs of that quality, but in her 25 years of life, she had not done it too often. And when she did it, she wanted to have everybody appreciate it. Well, Ellen, who also is 25, she looked at Sylvia's eggs and said, "Wow, how do you make them like that? I've got to learn how to make them like that." And so here Ellen is 25 years old already. She has a child who is in his 40s or 50s. And she has grandchildren, and she is 25 years old, and she hasn't learned how to cook eggs yet. No, but that doesn't disturb her. She says, "Show me how to do that. Tell me what you did. Did you flip it over a little bit or easily?" And Sylvie started to describe what she did, how she made it so that it was still a little loose on the top, you know, still... what would you say? Not set on the top. And then when that's just about ready, then you flip it over so that it gets cooked just perfectly on the top and the bottom. And when you stick your fork in it or your spoon or whatever, it's just perfect. The yolk is all soft and nice and oozes out. And it's just really beautiful. And it's the ideal egg, you know. And you say sunny side up because you like to have one side at least not frozen like a leather shoe. And but if you can do both sides like that and have both sides be equally as perfect and ideal, wonderful. Well, Ellen says, "How do you do that? How do you do that?" And Sylvie says, "Here's how you do it. And Ellen said, but how do you do it? Well, Sylvia said, practice. Get over there and practice. Now, Ellen is not used to doing things in slow gear. Ellen is a woman who is 90% of the time in high gear. She is moving at full speed ahead. She is trying to accomplish everything she wants to accomplish so quickly and so fantastically. Over the last 30 years, I remember she's 25 now, for the last 30 years, I've been training her in meditation. And in meditation, I say, now, slow down in meditation. Don't take on all the problems that you want to think about at one time. Just take one little thing that you want to think about and let your mind dwell on it and cuddle it and snuggle it. And all of a sudden, there's the answer. There's the solution. And Ellen says, but I've got 12 items now. I've got to take 2 minutes for this item, 2 minutes for this item, 2 minutes. I said, but that's not how it works. You take 2 minutes for each item and you have done nothing for any of them, because you've been so busy being concerned about your 2 minutes schedule and your timer that you don't pay attention to what you're doing. Well, now, Ellen could be considered an old lady by some people's standards. And by Hogan's Hero standards, I'm sure that the little old lady was no more than 68 or 70 years old during the Second World War. But at that time, the age span and activity of people was a little different, and younger people were old. Today, older people are young, and they're getting younger all the time. So Ellen has no excuse for not knowing how to make perfect eggs.
Right.
Well, that's not the only thing. Ellen has been listening to me and hearing me say, when you have a busy mind, that is, your mind is busy with wonderful projects and wonderful ideas and activities, you're on top of everything, like playing chess and, you know, playing Scrabble and all sorts of things that are using your mind quickly, like children use these games that they have on the computers. And I think it's a waste of time, but it's not. Their mind becomes so agile in playing those games that they can do all the things they want to do quickly and easily. Now, we have a guest coming to campus, and this guest is coming from Switzerland, and she has been here before a number of times, in fact. But this time, she feels a little old. She feels a little older, and she also feels like she's missing being with her family at Christmas time, but she's coming to campus because she wants to retreat. Now, she does not want herself to feel that she is a wheelchair girl. And yet, if she were to use the wheelchair at the airport, the airport attendant would zip her right to where she wants to go and not think a thing about it. That's what they're there for, and that's what they like, and they get a tip for doing this. You give them a $3,000 tip or something like that, you know, and it makes it well worth their while. And it's a courtesy vehicle, you know. And so you're renting this courtesy vehicle. The taxi cab is a courtesy vehicle, but it's not for free. It's a courtesy, but it'll take you wherever you want to go, but you pay the fare. And the same with the wheelchair. The same with the roll stool, as they call it. It is a courtesy vehicle to take you where you want to go if you feel just a little frustrated about all of the twists and turns in the airport to take you to this port or that port or this airline or that place to wait, you know. And so you've seen many very charming, attractive young ladies get on a wheelchair and go flying through the airport, and you think to yourself, what's wrong with them? Why do they need a wheelchair? Well, that's because you are from the old school. You forgot that that's a taxi.
That's exactly.
You're paying for that service.
Taxi.
Now, it's true, if everybody did it, the place would be full of wheelchairs, but then they'd have more rolling walks. But most people don't want to do that, because most people are travelers, and they know where they're going, and they feel very confident, and they just go zippity-doo. I don't want you to take my handbag. I don't want you to take my suitcase. I want to take it myself. It's not that I don't want to pay a tip. tips are okay, but you go into a hotel, and right away they grab for your suitcases, and right away they grab this and grab that. Hey, no, no, please. I want to do it myself. Well, we're here to help. Well, here's $5. Okay, thank you, bye. You know, pay them. Because that's what they're there for. They're there to be a service if you want it. And you also service if you don't want it. You pay them not to take it. And so then you carry it up to your room yourself, and it's quite nice. It's quite nice to be able to have. Now, we are learning very slow to not take so much stuff, to travel light, and have a smaller suitcase. And what do the suitcases all have on them?
Wheels.
They all have, and the wheels are becoming more and more sophisticated. I have two beautiful little suitcases, tiny ones, that can carry a lot of weight. And you just take your finger on the top, and it'll walk next to you. It'll just roll along so nice. And you just give it a little spin, it'll circle around, you know. Or you shove it, and then you walk and catch up with it. But you know, it's kind of fun. But it's easy and light and perfect. Now, why do we still be so concerned about paying somebody a tip? Well, a tip is something that we have been taught to believe is for an activity or a service that's over and above, beyond what we do. You don't go up to the pilot and say, here's $10, you did a good flight, you know. Because, my God, I would hope to heaven he does a good flight. You know, I like to go where I'm going. He's paid a good salary to get me there, and his tip is the job well done. Now, if he does something over and above that, you know, if he will take a little child up into the cockpit and let the little child look around so forth, his mother gives him a tip for doing that, that's lovely. But if the pilot does it out of the kindness of his heart, that's even better. Of course, these days they don't allow that. But that's okay too. So, our friend who is coming to visit was reluctant about using the wheelchair, because a wheelchair has the connotation of being ill or being infirm or in some way not being able to handle yourself. Well, fright and not knowing what's going on and not knowing where you are and not speaking the language. When she comes over here and she doesn't speak English and she only speaks Switzerland, you know, it makes her feel very insecure. And as much as we've insisted she learn English, she's been slow to do that. But you see, it's all our own choice. Now you watch. It'll be a snap like that, and she will learn English because she's working on it. Now all of a sudden she'll know it. And then she'll walk around like a sophisticated lady. She'll be in her 90s, and she will act like she's in her 25s because she is self-confident. You see, self-confidence comes from many areas, and self-confidence comes from many things. When I said this is a courtesy vehicle that she'd be using, right away everybody here on campus went to the dictionaries to look up courtesy vehicle in Switzerdeutsch, in German, and they came up with all sorts of different definitions, but every definition was a sickness definition. Every definition was something that had to do with the hospitalization. You know, you have a person who has an injury or needs help because their legs or their body doesn't function right. Well, also, if you look it up as a courtesy vehicle, then you look it up like a taxi cab. Now, would you feel reluctant to call a cab if you wanted to go someplace? No. Would you feel reluctant to call a streetcar if you wanted to go someplace? No. Or a bus? Or would you feel reluctant to say, oh no, you live next door to me, don't give me a ride home, it's only 12 miles, I'll walk, you know. You would never do that, because your friend says, oh, how silly, oh, well, you want to walk? Well, you know, come to think of it, walking is good. Junior, you drive the car home. I'm going to take a walk with this person, with my neighbor. I've never really had a chance to walk and talk, you know. And so that's lovely. But all things, whatever you want to name anything, and claim that it is for you, that's what it is for you. We should have fun in our life. We're never too old to learn new tricks. They say a dog is never too old to learn new tricks. Well, I assure you, read me the title of the book. if you will read this book, bring it here, please.
Perfect dog.
This is by Cesar Millan. It's called How to Raise the Perfect Dog. It has a label, buy one and get 50% off the next one, right on top of the title. So Sylvia, she was trying to read this to us, couldn't read it. But the thing is, How to Raise the Perfect Dog. There now. And Through Puppyhood and Beyond. Well, I read the book. And as I read the book, I realized all of my errors in raising puppies and dogs and the many, many dogs that I've had. How simple it could have been if I merely understood the dog. Now, the greatest understanding of the dog is that the dog is a dog. The dog is first a dog, as Mr. Caesar would say. It's first a dog. Then it is a breed, and then something else. You know. But first a dog. It's not a pit bull. It's a dog. And as a dog, it has certain dog qualities about it that you can depend on 100%. And if you're going to look at it as a pit bull, then you're going to look at it as some of its various faculties or whatever. But he teaches in here and shows by illustration how when you are self-assertive yourself and you go up to the dog and you say, this is my territory, now you stay there. And you have the patience to make sure the dog stays there while you're claiming your area. And then you do that 3 or 4 times. The dog remembers it forever. But he also pointed out some other things that were very fascinating. He pointed out that puppies are fun, but puppies make mistakes. It's not that they make mistakes, it's that they haven't been taught. Yeah. If their mother was there, their mother would bring them in line right away, but we don't. We treat them as little babies, as just gentle little things, instead of saying, sit, stay. The dog wants to know that it's supposed to do something and that it has to do it. And when the dog whines, instead of jumping to its call, you just let it alone and ignore it totally. And then after a while, it realizes that it's not going to get its own way by whining, and so it won't whine anymore. Now, if a dog is hurt, it'll cry, that's different, or whatever. But to get its own way, you see, you learn these things. Now, you should have learned these things in raising children, or in seeing children being raised in the world, but we didn't. And the reason we didn't is because a dog is not a child. A dog is a dog. However, this dog psychology would work very well on people's psychology, too. But along with that, when a dog goes through adolescence, it completely changes its personality. Now, are you so stupid? Am I so ignorant that I don't know that when a human child goes through adolescence, he does all sorts of crazy things? And I say, why is he so crazy? Well, he has hormones that are kicking in. He has his bones and body is expanding. He's becoming aware of life from another point of view. Well, from the point of view where he's in charge and not his parents anymore. Whatever his parents have taught him, he has to carry on in his life. And you see, in a way, we can understand that a little bit. We don't really understand it, but in a way, we can understand it. Well, if you raise a dog, as Caesar suggests and as Caesar teaches, you will understand why human children do what they do. But you'll also understand why dogs do what they do. Because dogs, when their hormones kick in, they have all sorts of instinctual activities that need to be met. Now, Caesar says that if you're not going to breed dogs and raise dogs, have them neutered. Because the neutering of a dog does not make it fat. He had a bunch of myths that he dispelled, and it does not make the dog in any way not a perfect dog. And the dog, in fact, when Caesar had his pit bull neutered, he had the cords cut and so forth, and then he also had the testicles cut off because it didn't need to be there just hanging doing nothing and getting in the way of things, you know. And so the dog was now a trim, slim, wonderful gadget. You know, he just was a beautiful dog. And it was wonderful. It was just wonderful. Now, why do bulls that are in the barnyard have big testicle pegs? Because they have a lot of sperm that has to be used to bring about baby cows, you know, calves. And that's their business. That's their business. But if you don't, if you're not in the business, you don't need that. So, and these are things that Caesar points out, that the vets point out, keep the dog from having unwanted diseases and cancers and other things that are caused by having those conditions exist. Well, now, you're not about to do that to human children. You know, you're not about to do that to boys and girls, have them neutered. But stop and think. A dog that's neutered becomes mellow and becomes very wonderful in every way. A child, if it were neutered, would be the same way. But a child, we think, it, we can train them to like themselves, to delight in who they are and be the wonderful, magical people that they are. And they don't have to go through this physical neutering. They just go through the mental conditioning, mental controlling of themselves. So, but in reading what Caesar has to say here, you find out that all of these things are going on in human beings because a human has an animal part of his nature, you know. A human is a mammal, whether he likes it or not. And an animal is a mammal, but not a human. So therefore, if you treat the animal, the dog, as an animal, you will get the best results out of them and have the most wonderful times out of them. And if you will not stop learning just because you're 70 years old, just because you're 80 years old, or just because you're 90, you stop learning, and learning means involving yourself in new adventures all the time. But if you keep yourself involved in new adventures all the time, your life becomes more and more brand new. It's like you're a little child just learning something, which you are. And you're aware, well, I can use a computer. Woo, goody, goody, goody. And then Ellen says, I can use a computer. Now, Herb, why are you suggesting I get into Apple? And I said, well, I don't care if you're getting Apple or not. I am. And I'm loving it. And every year older that I get, I'm younger, learning my Apple. And I'm just having a great and wonderful time. And Ellen says, well, you are. I'd like to do that too. And I said, well, then get involved. Get involved. Get yourself an apple and get going with it, you know. Look at what Adam and Eve did with the apple. But, you know, you can just do lots of wonderful things if you really get yourself involved in life. And you are adults, and you are humans, and you are divine. And we take our dogs and we train them, whether they're little dogs or big dogs or whatever age they are, they're never too old to learn how to do what we want them to do. It's us that must train them. What do you expect out of your dog? That's what you get. What do you expect out of your child? That's what you get. What do you expect out of yourself? That's what you get. Now, what do you expect out of yourself? Are you going to retire when you're 45? A lot of guys coming out of the services, they retire at 45, and then they die at 46.
Oh.
Well, really, they have nothing to live for. They have nothing to involve themselves in. They say, I deserve to be retired. No, you don't. You're a young person. My gosh, 45. When I was 45, I was in the middle of my early stage projects, you know, fantastic things. And now that I'm 26, you know, or 25, I'm even more involved in more and more wonderful things. Have fun. If you have a chance to read How to Raise the Perfect Dog Through Puppyhood and Beyond by Caesar Millan, do so, because that book will not only teach you about dogs and about animals, it'll teach you about yourself in such a beautiful way that you will become the most grand and glorious being on earth. And you know, people who are dog lovers, really, they have good taste in housing and clothing and all these things, but they don't get their thrill out of looking at beautiful paintings. They get their thrill out of looking at how well they have trained their dog and themselves to walk down the street like a proud couple, you know. Mm-hmm. Or when the dog goes in the park and the other dog starts acting up and you say, Rex, come here. And Rex immediately comes, you see. And when that is the case, see, Sylvia's looking on the couch for Rex, but Rex is sitting right behind Sylvia. But, you see, it is more beautiful than any painting we could ever look at, or any artwork by any sculptor, or any beautiful clouds in the sky. When you look at your dog that loves you so much and wants to be with you, and just because it's getting older, it doesn't want to go and have its own family. It wants to stay with you. Whereas your children leave you, your husbands and wives have other adventures that they want to get involved in, and so forth, but your dog always wants to be by your side. How wonderful and how blessed we are to have our dogs. So have a lovely, lovely dog day, and know that I love you, I love you,
I love you.